As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hello, everybody. I'm really excited to have Kim with us today, Kim Leatherman. Say hi, Kim.
Hello.
Kim Leatherman works with preschoolers with autism and is a health and wellness coach. She was diagnosed with narcolepsy in her early 40s, but has been experiencing symptoms since her late teens. She hopes to shed light on this invisible sleep disorder and the impacts of living with it. So please welcome Kim Leatherman. Take it away, Kim.
Thank you. My name is Kim Leatherman, coming to you from Seattle. Life before narcolepsy was all about family. We were really close. We had a lot of fun together. Pretty close. Didn't go on a ton of vacations, but our fun thing every year was holidays. We had tons of fun. We would throw up Christmas and we would joke that we were vomiting Christmas all over the house because with four kids with Garland, we would just go crazy and really just, you know, had a good time celebrating and being together. It was all about being together. And that brought me a lot of joy. My sister and I were really close. We shared a room. We were 5 years apart, which was fun. She was my live baby doll. So I was five and I got to feed her and take care of her. And we shared a room, which was tough in the teen years, I'm going to say, with an eight-year-old and me being 13. It was a little rough. But especially when I moved out to go to college, we became really good friends and we have been ever since. So the other joy of my life was performing. I started performing when I was six, and the last show I did was when I was 29 and I was pregnant with my first son. But singing just was my way of fitting in places. I had a lot of, you know, just I didn't have a huge self-esteem. I was shy. And so singing was one way that I could win friends. I could, you know, people would go, wow. Oh, you really can sing. And I'm like, yeah, I did plays, musical plays all throughout my life. And my favorite job in the world was when I got to work at Great America Amusement Park in the shows. The summer that I was 17, it was the summer after I graduated, I actually got to sing. I could not believe that they paid me to actually do what I love. It was awesome. So that was life before I knew anything about narcolepsy. Then that summer, I had, you know, worked at Great America, and then I went to my first year of college at UC Santa Cruz. That was awesome to go to college and, you know, be taking that next step. So I came home for winter break, and my sister and I were like missing each other. She had been my roommate my whole life, you know. We were so excited to like have a slumber party and like spend time together just catching up on all the things that we'd missed out on the last couple months of our life. And so, you know, we planned it all out. We were going to stay up all night and we got snuggled down in, you know, our beds with our jammies. And we're like, okay, let's go. And she goes, okay, so let me tell you about, and that's the last thing I remember hearing because I just fell asleep. the next thing I heard was, Kim, you're asleep. And I'm like, sorry. Oh my gosh. I'm like, I'm so sorry. You know, I felt so bad. I just kept apologizing. And she's like, oh, okay. Well, I'm like, I don't know why I'm so tired. And so then, you know, she starts telling me again about the boys that she's liking and the friend drama and all that. And then I wake up to her going, Kim, she's like, gosh, you don't even care about what I'm telling you. And I'm like, no, I care. I care. I don't know why I'm so exhausted. I can't stay awake. I can't keep my eyes open. So that was like the first instance where I really remembered sleep being a problem, because it had an impact on my sister, who, you know, I was really looking forward to spending that time with. And it made her disappointed and sad, and me too. Luckily, she forgave me. She's super amazing. So that was when I was 18, and I really remember that specific moment. From 18 to 24, I was in college. I actually ended up transferring to San Jose State because I passed my classes at UC Santa Cruz. I didn't feel that I had the self-discipline to be successful there with the beach right there. And it was a pass or fail system, so no grades to motivate me. And it was a wet campus too at that time. So I was just like, okay, this is not, you know, gonna result well. So I transferred to San Jose State, where I was closer to home. There were less like distractions like that, or so I thought. But I went to college and I participated in a lot of things. I participated in the Greek system a little bit. I participated in plays and musicals. I was a resident advisor. I was a peer advisor. I really was involved. And I also had a job. And so, you know, there would be things that would happen that, you know, now looking back in hindsight, it's easy to see that, oh, that was the narcolepsy. But at the time, I was like, you know, came into my dorm room one night and they're having a party in our room. And I'm like, I'm exhausted. And they're like, oh, we can all leave. And I'm like, no, y'all are good. They were sitting on the edges of the bed because the beds were like, there was a little walkway in between. And so everybody's feet were in the middle. They were sitting on the two edges. And I just curled up next to the wall behind everybody. And I just passed out. I was out. The loud music, the talking, whatever was going on, didn't bother me a bit. And I used to say that I'm a master of taking naps. I can nap anywhere, anytime, doesn't matter the situation. And I thought, you know, well, I'm a college student. Of course I'm tired. Everybody's tired. We're doing all these activities and job and school. So I didn't really realize. I would dismiss a lot of the symptoms, you know, because I just assumed it was my normal. So I assumed it was your normal. So I went through college. I did end up meeting my husband, who we ended up getting married 2 months before we graduated, just timing wise. And so when I graduated and I left college, I was a wife, but I was super excited to be a mom. But we decided to hold off having kids for a while. So I got jobs, you know, in the meantime and whatever. But I was super excited when I was 29, I had my first son. And then at 30, we bought a house that was like our forever home. So we thought. And then when I was 31, I had my second son. And so I was so excited that year to host my very own holiday at my house, sharing my home and my family with my extended family. I think we'd invited 10 other people to come on both sides of the family. And I like spent so much energy cleaning and preparing, shopping, you know, doing all the things, getting the house ready for guests. And that morning, wake up super early to make the stuffing. It's Thanksgiving. So I'm making stuffing, got the bird in the oven, got the boys ready, got myself ready, got the rest of the house ready. And by the time my mom and my sister came, my mom's like, you look exhausted. She's like, just go sit down for a little bit. And I'm like, oh, okay. And I sat down and the next thing I know, I'm waking up to the table all set, all the sides were made. everything was ready to go. The bird's out of the oven, waiting to be carved. And I was just like, oh my gosh, how long did I sleep, you know? And my mom and sister had totally taken up the slack for me and totally prepared the meal. It was super kind and amazing because they didn't have any kind of judgment, any kind of anything. They didn't make me feel bad at all. They just did what needed to be done so we could have a nice holiday meal. So I was so grateful. I've always been so grateful. And that's before they even knew that I had narcolepsy. They just thought I was just regular tired, you know? So then fast forward to, I guess it was like a year later, we moved to Washington State because my husband at the time got a job in Washington State for Microsoft. And so we ended up moving and my boys were 1 and 3. They were really little. And basically that time of my life was just my mom time. It was really nice to have kids moving to a new place because, you know, we'd go to playgrounds or they'd be in preschool. We'd do community activities. And so I got to meet a lot of other moms. And, you know, everybody with a 1 and a 3-year-old is tired, you know, when they're sick and you're up all night and all that stuff, right? So I just assumed everyone was as tired as I was. So we would go to play dates, of course, at people's homes, and they would invite me in for a cup of coffee, the mom, and, you know, the kids would go off and play and we'd sit there and talk. And I would definitely had a few occasions where I remember falling asleep mid my sentence, like talking to people. And I'd be so embarrassed and I'd try to play it off like, oh, I was just closing my eyes for a second, like, you know, just a long blink. Or, but it was embarrassing. And like, I didn't, you know, I'd just be like, oh, I'm just tired, you know, but they weren't falling asleep, but it didn't really hit me, you know, how excessive the sleepiness was during the day. And then, I came across my phone one day when my little Aaron was probably, I don't know, 4 or 5, and he had gotten it and decided to take some selfies before selfies were a thing and got me sleeping in the background. When I saw those pictures, I was mortified. I was totally embarrassed. You know, I'm like, oh my gosh, thank goodness this is on my phone so that he's not going around like showing people or whatever. You know, there was also the scary part of it, of how long was I out that he was able to get my phone to take these pictures? I had no idea until I like had gone through my camera roll. So luckily I had kids that were responsible and they really have always been, and they weren't doing crazy things or, you know, experimenting with things. So luckily everybody made it. We were all safe, but it's a little scary to think about in hindsight. So that was till I was about 38 or so. Then when I was around 38, 39, I started working at the kids' school. I worked at their elementary school in a preschool program for special needs kids and loved it. I'm actually still doing it because I love it so much. So I would sit behind the kids. I was a paraeducator. The teacher would be in front going through calendar, weather, reading a book, singing a song, and I would be behind the kids to monitor their behavior. Well, it was later in the year and, you know, the kids pretty much had good behavior. So I wasn't like on. And all of a sudden, one of the little girls is pulling on my shoulder going, "Wake up, Miss Kim." And I'm like, "What?" I'm like, "Was I really asleep?" And I'm like, "Oh my gosh." And that adrenaline rush, right? Of like, that will never happen again. Cause that was so embarrassing. I'm like, "Okay, I'm awake now." And 5 minutes later, "Kim, wake up, Miss Kim." And I'm like, oh my gosh. I'm like, I need to like get up and get a drink of water. Like, what is wrong with me that I can't stay awake? And this was the point where I started realizing that this is excessive. When I can't control it, the other scary time it happened is when I would open my eyes while I was driving, meaning I'd be driving along. All of a sudden I'd go, and open my eyes. And that only then I knew they had been shut. You know, it wasn't like I was tired and they were slowly closing. It was like this. It was frightening. It was frightening. I didn't know what was happening. I would just like kind of go away. Like, I didn't even know how to describe it. Like my consciousness was just gone, but for a split second. It wasn't like I was weaving or anything. It was just like a really long blink, if you will, but enough to then again, send that adrenaline rushing through me of holy cow. And then my babies are in the back of the car. You know, these are my kids. This is dangerous. So the combination of these two things happening really had me go to the doctor and get diagnosed, because I'm like, I need to know what's going on. This is not normal tiredness or sleepiness. So I went to the doctor and said, I'm having these issues with just not being able to stay awake. And they had me do a sleep test, and I was diagnosed with sleep apnea, like moderate sleep apnea. And I actually just looked at my medical history, and they did, it did say hypersomnia, which is a big word for excessive daytime sleepiness. So I was like, oh, interesting. I didn't realize that was in my chart at that time. So narcolepsy is a chronic neurological disorder, and it really affects the sleep and wake cycles. So it's not that you are sleeping all day long. It's that the cycle is disturbed. And it affects one in 2,000 people. There are, Julie might have to help me with this, I believe 200,000 people in the US that have narcolepsy, and 3 million worldwide. And it's highly underdiagnosed or misdiagnosed. Approximately 50% of the people that have narcolepsy are not diagnosed or misdiagnosed with things like epilepsy or schizophrenia or depression. And symptoms can be, like I said, the excessive daytime sleepiness. It wasn't until I got to the point where I recognized it as excessive that it took me into the doctor's office, you know, because I could kind of dismiss the other instances of symptoms that had happened in my life. There's also cataplexy, which cataplexy is like muscle weakness that occurs usually with really big emotions. It could be, you know, like something really funny, or, you know, other big surprise that really, you know, affects the muscles. And it can be anything from a slack jaw to buckling of the knees to actually just falling flat. The people who have cataplexy, they are aware of what's going on, even though they can't speak during the episode. And it can last for seconds or minutes. And cataplexy, you can have narcolepsy with or without. So not everybody who has narcolepsy has cataplexy necessarily. I don't have cataplexy. There are hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations. These usually happen, hypnagogic happens when you're falling asleep, and hypnopompic hallucinations occur when you're starting to wake up. And they are very realistic hallucinations. They can be sight, sound, touch related, and quite frightening. I luckily don't have those either. Sleep paralysis. This is something that in hindsight, I looked back and went, oh, I did have that a few times as a teenager, where when you're either on the verge of falling asleep or waking up, it can be seconds or just a couple minutes, but that you can't move your body as you're coming into or out of sleep. And again, though, that's one of those things I kind of just went, you know, okay. So I just guess I'm not fully awake yet. So I can't, you know, move my legs. Easy to just brush off. Disrupted nighttime sleep is one that people don't realize people with narcolepsy can have issues with, like insomnia. Again, it's a misconception that people with narcolepsy just fall asleep and, you know, all the time. You can actually have like a hard time staying awake during the day and have a hard time sleeping at night, because it is a disturbance of your sleep and wake cycles.
And then, as I said before, there's the two types of narcolepsy with and without cataplexy. They do know that people who have cataplexy, the research has found that there is a lack of hypocretin, which is a neurotransmitter, and that that's related. But without cataplexy, they're still doing the research on that. And I'm glad, because I'd like to know what's going on with that, since that's the one I deal with. Diagnosis. For a diagnosis of narcolepsy, there's a nighttime and daytime test that occurs. The nighttime one's called a polysomnogram, and then the daytime one is multiple sleep latency test. So when I went in for my original sleep test, it was the polysomnogram, and they were actually able to see that I did hit REM, which is the rapid eye movement. That's where you're dreaming. I hit that really quickly. That is what they're looking for when they're doing these tests, is how quickly do you go to rapid eye movement part of sleep. And for the daytime test, I thought they were crazy, because I was like, they're like, yeah, you're going to come in, you're going to fall asleep for half an hour, and then we're going to wake you up and you're going to be awake for 2 hours. And then we'll come in until you go to sleep and take a nap again. And then we'll do that 4 times. And I'm like, are you giving me some kind of like sleeping aid or something so that I fall asleep? And they said, well, it's kind of part of the test to see, do you fall asleep when we just say take a nap? And lo and behold, I was asleep within 5 minutes every time they came in, and I was dreaming within 3 minutes at max. So I finally did get my diagnosis at actually 44. In looking back, like, you know, preparing for this presentation, there were 4 years between me first reporting that I was having sleep issues or something was going on, and having this test. So that was when I was aware. Treatments for narcolepsy are wake promoters or stimulants for daytime sleepiness. That's what I currently use, are stimulants to stay awake during the day. Nighttime medications and for the daytime sleepiness and the cataplexy. There's also antidepressants that are prescribed for cataplexy as well, and scheduled daytime naps, if that's possible, when that's possible, that can be a big help. I actually was originally, given stimulants, and it wasn't quite doing the trick. And so I tried 2 specific narcolepsy medications. One I had a reaction to, and the other one wasn't effective. I was still falling asleep. And finally, we went back to my original stimulant and just bumped up the amount. And we found my magic number. And I say magic number because every single person is different in how they're treated. Just like the symptoms can vary person to person, same with the treatment. There isn't like one treatment like, oh, you have narcolepsy, take this, you're good. It's just, it varies a lot. So it's frustrating as a person with narcolepsy to have to go through all the, you know, trying something and seeing if it works, and oh, it didn't work. Because then all that time that doesn't work, you're still having issues, you know, you're still not fully present at work or with your family or whatever. So, yeah. So my life with narcolepsy, gratitude really sums up for me my journey and how I live with narcolepsy. I have got a fabulous fiance, Donnie. We met about 10 years ago after I got divorced, and he's my rock. He is also one of those who, without even realizing, because he's been with me through this whole process of discovery and figuring it out and getting diagnosed. So he just, you know, does what needs to be done. You know, if I come home and I'm just out, he will, you know, be right there to cook dinner, which he often does. And he's a great cook. Lucky me. he's a sweetheart. He's thoughtful and kind. He never makes me feel bad about it. And it's hard on him because especially when we were first together and, you know, we weren't really understanding that this was about narcolepsy, we'd go to work all day, I'd come home and I'd crash, you know, especially through, like I was telling you, the different medications and, you know, all of that trial and error. And so he'd be pretty lonely. You know, he's like, yes, I have a girlfriend and a fiance now, but I don't see her much. She's at work and then she's asleep. So I really am super grateful for him with hanging in there through all of it. He's a rock star and he's wonderful. And I'm so lucky. My boys, Alex and Aaron, they are now both in college and they're amazing human beings. I always tell them I would choose them if I could. We all share a love of music. We go to Fifth Avenue Theater and see musicals when I can drag them there. But we all have fun and they're amazing. And I'm just really grateful to have them in my life. I love my parents so much. You guys, they're the ultimate. They're super supportive. Like I said, they supported me before they knew I had narcolepsy. And then it's so funny because with my family, once I said I had a diagnosis, I'm like, I have narcolepsy. They're like, oh, that explains it. Like it was no big deal, right? And it's funny because by being on social media, support groups and things, like my gratitude for the way my family has supported me, I can't even tell you. Hearing the horror stories of people who aren't supported. Oof. But it's nice to be part of those groups to let people know they're not alone and that there are other people out there that really get what they're going through. They're not lazy. They're not unmotivated. And my family has always like been that support for me. And of course, my twin that was born 5 years late. she's my other rock. We just were really closely connected through, you know, phone and video chats and things like that. And she's got an awesome husband too, that we chit chat, the four of us with Donnie and me. We all get along really good. I just wish we all lived closer. My family's spread out. So they're all in California and I'm in Washington, but they're fabulous. And yeah, that family support, I can't even tell you how important it is. So because of being able to manage with medication, with support, with a healthy lifestyle, I found a great program that helped me get healthy and lose 80 pounds. And really, you know, all of the combination, it's increased my energy. So I've been able to really manage living this really amazing life that wasn't possible without being diagnosed and being treated. Because before I was just surviving. And when you're just surviving, that takes all of your energy. That takes everything. And so there's nothing left. You know, there wasn't even anything left for poor Donnie at the end of the day, you know, as far as even a conversation. So being able to manage with medication and being able to have more energy throughout the day, I get to now contribute to others. And that's what lights up my soul. I love contributing and empowering other people. And I've had opportunities for leadership because I'm able to function. So I work with my preschoolers with autism. Contributing to them, celebrating their successes fills me up. Sharing this gift of health and wellness with other people, with adults, and, you know, especially people that might have narcolepsy, like showing them you can have some more energy. I've gotten opportunities through my work to be a crisis prevention intervention instructor, teaching teachers how to deal with big behaviors. I got appointed to the executive board of our teachers union and was chosen to be a public speaker for narcolepsy awareness. And one of my really proud moments is being asked to be a board member for Autism Compassion Africa. This is a a couple of gals, Colleen and Whitney, who are good friends, who came up to me with this idea of, we have this nonprofit we just established on paper. It's just a non-paper thing. And it spoke to my heart because it's kids with autism. And then they told me they're opening a school in Ghana, Africa for kids with autism, and that this was going to save the lives of some of these kids. This was going to really impact communities. And I was like, wow, that's amazing. And I went around telling everybody about it. And people started telling me, oh, well, if you have an auction, let me know, because I have some stuff to contribute. And I'm just like, what? Like, well, I don't know anything about fundraising or auctions. Okay, well, okay. And then I got off the phone and I'm like, can you believe this person was going to give me something? And they're like, well, I'm a yoga instructor. I'll give you 2 months worth of, and I'm like, you'll give me 2 months worth of free yoga? And they're going to give me, I'm like, seriously? And so I called up Whitney and Colleen and I'm like, you guys, we have to have an auction. And that was the first of many, but I got to help out at that ground level and, you know, procure things and help them put together their very first auction so that they actually could establish the school. And they have, and it's successful. They've even brought some autism education here. So it's expanding and it's this wonderful thing. And I got to be a contribution and help out because I had the energy to. Wouldn't have been possible. So yeah, that's kind of, and as far as, this was actually a really happy moment for me when I got to meet Julie in person. But yeah, it's, there's a average of 8 to 15 years between when people first have symptoms and they're diagnosed for narcolepsy. For me, it was 25 years plus. And just thinking, you know, that having these kind of conversations and spreading awareness that maybe somebody out there could have a different trajectory to their life. Here I was at what, 44, 45, like starting this new life of contributing and feeling like I'm this productive member of society. At 45, how about if we caught kids when they were like first having symptoms? What a different trajectory and how powerful that would be for them. So that's why I am really dedicated to raising awareness, because I would love to, you know, help somebody else to just recognize and go, hey, you know, you're not actually lazy and unmotivated. You're falling asleep in my class all the time, but let's have you go see your doctor. Let's go talk to a sleep specialist, you know? So I really would love that. And I'd love for doctors to know like what it's actually like to live with this. So it, instead of it being just this thing that they are trying to help you manage, like to know that there's a personal impact and, you know, beyond, right? It ripples out to your family, the people that I now get to positively affect their lives. That's because I've got these doctors and wonderful professionals working with me. So yeah. And we just need to help people, because if under 50% of people are currently diagnosed, that means there's a lot of people out there that are suffering probably in silence or not knowing what's going on. So yeah. So please spread the word. And I think that is the end of my presentation.
Great job, Kim.
Thank you.
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
We have lots of questions. I will start with one of my questions first, though. Being from Seattle, which you mentioned that you live in Seattle, do you feel like weather influences your experience with narcolepsy or just your general mood or any of that?
You know, I can't say officially, like, you know, who knows, but definitely I do notice that in, like, even now, like, we're starting to get into the rainy season. And when we do, like I was just thinking to myself today that my circadian clock is off because I woke up at like 8:30, opened the blinds and it was dark. And I was just like, okay, I just want to go back to bed. You know, I'm like, I need to take my medication so I can, you know, wake up and be like productive today. So yeah, I think it does. You know, I honestly, I believe it affects everybody up here because Seattle's known for being the coffee capital. I don't think that is by mistake. And I could be making it up. But seriously, the coffee intake in this place is crazy. And why do people drink coffee? Because they need the caffeine, because they think it's going to help wake them up. So
wow.
I see a little something there.
I never thought of that. That's really yeah. Something. Yeah. And I just wonder about I know for me, the humidity impacts my sleepiness, but also my cataplexy. So I would imagine it's more, you know, just with all the rain that it's more humid there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I don't know about that. I'm not sure.
Interesting. We had a question about how does your narcolepsy impact your boys?
Yeah. Well, there's one funny story of when Donnie and I were dating and he was sitting with me on the couch and we were watching TV or something. And I, of course, did my normal nod off. And my boys came up and asked me, like, if they could have, like, candy or something. And I was just like, yeah, sure, whatever, you know, because I just answer thinking I'm knowing what I'm talking about and answering. And I remember waking up to Donnie going, hey, you can't ask her that when she's in this mode. So, but I think, you know, they were pretty little when I was like having the discovery about it. Yeah, I don't really know. I mean, I've asked them before if there was an impact to them and they're like, not really. Like, you know, we just knew like there would be times where I would take 15-minute naps and then I'd be good to go for an hour or two. So when I was in the early stages before I really knew what was going on, I would naturally nap as like a coping mechanism.
Yeah. All right. You told me a little bit more about your boys too and how they're so into musicals like you. So that's so, so cool. Do you still sing, by the way?
I don't perform, but I sing almost every day with my preschoolers. But there's a big difference between singing like Twinkle, Twinkle, Little Star and, you know, them breaking into the Patti LaBelle version and them going, can you sing it the real way? I'm like, this voice has won awards, you know, but they don't care. They just want to hear it the way that, you know, they always hear it.
Yeah. Oh, that's so cool though. Okay. So we had a question about medications. Someone, I think you might've mentioned it, but you know, which medications do you use and do you experience any anxiety with those medications?
Yeah. I'm super fortunate. The one that actually ended up working for me at a higher dose was Ritalin. I've not tried Adderall. I did try Provigil and Nuvigil, and I don't remember which one was which, but one of them caused this like pinprick feeling, like Christmas lights is how I describe it. It was just random pinprick feelings. And I was like, they did a neurological test to see if there was something going on. They're like, we can't really, you know, see anything wrong neurologically. And they said it could be a side effect. So I stopped taking the medication. Boom, it was gone. But then the other one that I took with the Provigil, Nuvigil, whichever one it was, wasn't effective. Like I was still just as tired as if I hadn't taken it. So that's when I then went back on Ritalin and took the higher dose. And no anxiety for me. One thing I did discover recently, which is really important, I think, is so I take two pills because that's what my doctor said. That was the highest dose that it came in. So I needed to take two. Well, I have a new sleep doctor and I called the office and the guy goes, why are you taking two pills? Do you take them at different times? I said, no, I take them both in the morning. He goes, well, you could just take one pill. I'm like, oh, okay. Because the actual like medications called methylphenidate. And so he goes, methylphenidate comes in 72 milligrams. You can do that. And I'm like, oh, okay. Well, I had super high blood pressure. I had an ER visit that had strokes and symptoms and all these like weird things going on. And when they gave me my, what do you call it? My paperwork, when they let me leave, it said the name brand of the one pill. And I was like, what is this? I'm not on this. And then I realized it said in parentheses, methylphenidate. And I'm like, So long story short, we went through and found out it was just the different brand that caused that. So like my suggestion is, if you're a person that like medication doesn't work for me, different brands have different effects. So that one did not work for me. It caused hypertension like really bad. But then I went right back on my Concerta that I'd taken before with the two pills. Fine, no problems. So really interesting, you know, that whole trying to find your magic combination. Yeah,
I think that was such a beautiful description and such an important part of your presentation tonight, is talking about just how individual of a process it is. And we all wish it wasn't. So, you know, we all want to take away from someone else and think, well, that's going to be the thing for me, you know, but everybody is different. So you never can quite know until you try, I guess.
Exactly.
So that was the lesson you probably didn't want to learn, but thank you for sharing. So hopefully it can help someone else.
Exactly.
So we have a great question here about your career. Someone is asking that they just changed into teaching. And they were diagnosed with narcolepsy about 2 years ago. So any advice in terms of how to reach out to peers and supervisors, I guess, when you're going through that as a teacher?
Well, again, I think I was like super fortunate to have people that, you know, were willing to work with me. I was really scared, you know, when it first started happening, because it like happened that one time that I was like, holy cow. And then it seemed to like, you know, and who knows, maybe it was the time of year in the dark and, you know, but I remember feeling like I was going to be judged, although I really wasn't. You know, people were super supportive because I was in this exploration of what's going on and trying to find out and figure it out. But I would just say, you know, I don't know. I just, it's hard because you don't know. You know, and I can't say, yeah, just let them know what's going on, because you could let them know what's going on and they could say, well, that's a danger to the kids if you're falling asleep, you know, or so it's really an individual decision whether you let them know that you're going through that process or not.
Yeah. I like to think sometimes that people think narcolepsy is either so big that like you won't be capable of anything. They're like, oh my God, you're going to be falling asleep. You won't be able to capable of like doing anything. Or people think it's so minor that it won't affect you at all, you know, that it's like, oh, you just fall asleep sometimes, who cares? And it's really, the reality is like somewhere in between. And so, you know, my general advice to people is just to know what it is you're looking for, and not always expect that someone's going to understand every symptom and everything you're going through, but being very strategic about aligning what you're telling them with what you want as far as an accommodation, you know? So if you're looking for something very specific that you know will help you, like align your story with that. But we can have a longer discussion about that another day. But I love what you said, Kim, about, you know, you never really quite know how someone's going to react, which is so true. We had a question from Matt in Nashville, wanted to know about, he's really glad to hear that you're in a supportive relationship. So what quality is most important to you? So I don't know if that's like quality, like what you might look for someone in a relationship possibly, or what's most important about him besides his good cooking. I mean, I think...
Well, he's good looking. He's not. You know, what's really funny is I met him and he was this workout-aholic, right? And so I was like, oh, he's totally fit. Let's get some of that over here, because this girl needs to like, you know, get into shape. And it didn't happen that way. We both were foodies, and I think I was a bad influence on him instead of him being the good influence on me. But luckily together we have, you know, gone down this path of health and wellness, and we both coach now and help other people. But really, like, I think the biggest quality is just like, for Donnie anyways, is that he is a good human being. He's the kind of honest person that is going to do the right thing no matter who's watching or if nobody's watching. You know, he is a honest, salt of the earth type of wonderful human, like, and loving, and I'm just so lucky. Yeah.
Well, you seem like an amazing person too. So I always feel like sometimes it feels like it's one-sided when we talk about this, but I'd like to hear what Donnie thinks about you too. Cause I
don't tempt him. He'll be running in the bedroom going, oh, let me tell you.
I love it. That's so wonderful to hear. And as being a single person at 37 years old, you give me a lot of hope that there's still hope.
So. Yeah. And we met online. I mean,
good.
Who knew?
I don't think we have any other outstanding questions at this point. So we've covered everything. This has been amazing. We just can't thank you enough, Kim, for sharing. Thank you for all that you're doing and for being part of this community and for sharing. I know it was really impactful. All right. Bye, everybody.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.